This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
Now, we're going to focus on financial well-being today, and specifically financial well-being in relation to women. Recent figures show that women need to work an extra 19 years to close the gender pension gap, a shocking statistic. And joining us to talk about where these gender disadvantages stem from and also how this inspired her to write a book empowering women to take control of their finances is author and award-winning chartered financial planner Amanda Redman. It is great speaking with you today, Amanda.
Hello, Paulina. It's lovely to be here.
So, Amanda, why are we seeing such a stark difference? What is contributing to this pension gap for women?
Well, basically, women are not saving as much into their pensions and also not saving for as long as men are. And there's obviously lots of reasons for that. It's not a simple single factor. Women will often take work breaks, career breaks, as they have children in some instances, or sometimes need to care for elderly relatives. Another contributing factor is that women still generally are on lower pay. The gender pay gap leads to the gender pensions gap over time. And the other aspect is that women are more likely to work part-time than men. And although for a number of years now, we've had auto-enrollment schemes where your employer enrolls you onto their pension scheme and pays money in, as you do as well. But women are more likely to have sometimes two or three separate part-time jobs. And sometimes it means that they don't actually benefit from being a member of any auto-enrollment scheme. So there are lots of different reasons why women are not contributing as much as men typically do into their pensions.
And I know you're a mom as well. Is this also your personal experience when it comes to looking at your finances and pension? Were you affected by any of this?
Well, before I became a financial planner, I didn't work in financial services at all. I was in the corporate workplace and I was probably very unaware of it. When I have a son who's 26 and I had him in 1997. When I returned to work after maternity leave with him, at the time, you either returned to work full time or you had to resign effectively. There was no flexible working. And so I returned to work full time with him. But then 11 years later, I had my daughter in 2009. And even by then, things had shifted significantly in that it was almost expected that women would go back to work, mums would go back to work part-time. I did with her, but it was always 4 or 4.5 days a week. So it was almost full-time. And I was shocked that in some ways I was being judged because I was effectively working full-time. And people thought that once you were a mum, you should really work part-time. So that's one of the things I explore in my book, about how society has changed its judgment around working mums. But from my personal experience, I managed to maintain my pension contributions. But I do know that I was affected by the gender pay gap. I do know that I was being paid less than equivalent male colleagues at certain times of my career. And I know from talking with my clients and with other friends and colleagues that are still in the corporate workplace, that unfortunately that's often still happening. It's not necessarily deliberate, but it is built in somehow, it's systemic to the way that workplaces operate these days.
Do you think, because you mentioned corporate work there, do you think workplace culture is really what we should be targeting? Because that it seems like it's contributing to this gap as well.
Definitely. Definitely. And as I say, it's no longer necessarily deliberate, but there is a lot of unconscious bias, I think, still within corporate policies, particularly around remuneration. So, for example, people are often rewarded financially for length of service. And again, because women are more likely to have career breaks and are more likely to take some time off, they will often have a reduced continuity of service compared to their male colleagues. So that's what we call an unconscious bias. it's not deliberately discriminating against women, but the effect of having that policy in place means that women are likely to be disadvantaged. Also, often promotion is based on people's experience rather than looking at their skills and ability to do the role. Again, that tends to favour men and can disadvantage women, particularly if they're coming back into the workplace after maternity leave. So there are definitely areas that HR and diversity and inclusion managers need to continue to focus on and improve.
It's interesting that you mention all of this because I know personally from experience of my own and like my friends, one of my friends became a mother, but before that she managed to build up her career to really good wages. She worked hard to get there, but after being mom and being away, when she came back, she found she was struggling to get the same sort of earnings, as if the gap kind of impacted how well she can work. So why do you think as women we often feel like we can't really ask to be paid better? I know there's been research done in recent years which showed that women often feel like they can't really ask for a raise, so maybe they feel guilty because they took that time off and feel like they should be paid less.
Yeah, you've hit on a really key point there, Paulina, because what you describe is something that I've witnessed many times. As you say, women, we know that men and women often operate differently. A lot of that stems from our relationship with money as we grow up as children. And women generally feel quite uncomfortable about negotiating their salary, about asking for a pay rise. And there is research that shows that women will often not put themselves forward for a promotion unless they feel they can do every single one of the requirements, whereas men will often put their hat in the ring if they can only tick a few of those boxes. So we know that we are different creatures in that respect. But you're absolutely right that when women return to the workplace after maternity leave, depending on the culture of the workplace, they can feel like they're on the back foot. And our confidence will reduce quite often the longer we're away from the workplace. So, if you have a relatively short maternity leave, you may be able to go back into exactly the same role that you were in before. But certainly, if you start to take more than about 9 or 12 months away from the workplace, it's likely that you will go back into a different role. Sometimes women feel grateful that they have the opportunity to get back at a similar level and maybe don't request the pay that the role requires and deserves. And it's also a frustration of mine that a lot of managers within workplaces will not value the skills that that woman has learnt since becoming a mum, because actually we learn such hugely valuable skills when we have young babies and children. We learn how to prioritize, how to make decisions quickly. And our time management, juggling multiple tasks at the same time. These are all skills that are really valuable within a workplace. And I'd very much like to see the conversation focus on appreciating the skills that the woman is bringing back into the workplace rather than it being positioned as, having to catch up because you've had time off, getting up to speed with things that have happened. That's all quite a negative slant. Whereas actually, any hiring manager should be delighted to have a returning mum in the workplace because she's going to be extra efficient, and super quick with her time management and prioritization skills.
I love everything you mentioned there because that's something that I feel like it definitely doesn't get enough recognition. Now, your book is called Dare to Be Fair, and I wonder, was there a specific moment that inspired you to write a book that's all about empowering women and when it comes to their finances?
Yeah, and so the book became a bit of a lockdown project in 2021 through the second COVID lockdown. But yes, that felt like a really good time for me to bring together my 20 plus years of experience in the corporate workplace with my 10 plus years experience of being a financial advisor. And one of the key triggers was that my son had graduated from university during COVID and was trying to get into the workplace. And it made me think, about his female friends, actually, who were also sort of in their early to mid-20s. And I was reflecting on how much has or hasn't changed in the 30 years since I was in their position. And clearly, a lot of workplace practices have changed through flexible working, and obviously COVID accelerated an acceptance of working from home. But my thought was actually for a lot of women who are entering the workplace in their 20s, there are still lots that hasn't changed. So by definition, we all start working, generally full of optimism, hopefully full of confidence in our own abilities. And it takes a few years for things to start to play out. For example, whether people are being paid fairly at the beginning of their careers, whether they are being assessed in an equal way for career and promotion opportunities. And I think everyone naively believes that they will be treated fairly. And women will sometimes experience something called the tiara mentality. As women, we expect that if we do a good job and work hard, then our efforts will be rewarded and we will be promoted. We assume that that will automatically be acknowledged. And often that is not the case. Even when you have a great boss, there are so many things going on that they need to sort out that unless we tell our boss how good we are, which is something that men typically find easier to do than women do, they may just not be aware of all the great things that we're doing. So one of the tips I would always give to women is make a list, make a note of all of the achievements that you have at work, whether they have a really small impact or whether they have a bigger impact, so that when it comes to your annual appraisal or when it comes to applying for a promotion, you are very well prepared with evidence of your skills and how you've positively affected the results of the company. The tiara mentality refers to the fact that we expect a tiara to be placed on our heads rather than actually having to advocate for ourselves. The thing that I learned very clearly in my corporate role was that, the key decisions about your career are taken when you're not in the room. They're often taken in senior management meetings, and therefore you need your boss to be advocating for you if you're not in the room yourself. I wanted to share my experience and wisdom, I guess, with my son's age group, so that women don't keep making the same mistakes over and over that we did 30 years ago. And within the book, I've got lots of very specific ideas about how companies can overcome some of these unconscious disadvantages. And these examples have come from my own experience, but also from talking and interviewing with other female senior managers as I was preparing to write the book.
So you mentioned some of the things we can find in your book, but is there any other maybe segment or advice from the book that you feel is really worth highlighting that can be found there?
Yeah, certainly. Well, the other aspect to this is that as women, we really do need to take control of our personal finances. And women often are very involved in sort of day-to-day budgeting and planning how they're going to spend their money in the short term, but are much less likely to be involved in planning for the longer term. And we often default to our partner to take that role on. And I've seen it many times that unfortunately, when women become separated from knowing their finances well, it can lead to a difficult situation for them, particularly if they end up getting divorced in future, because that's not a great time to realize that you don't necessarily know what assets you own or what debts might also be in your name. And I have met women before that don't actually know what their husband earns. They really have no understanding of the family's personal finances. So the book also talks about how important it is for women to get fully involved in all of those financial decisions, to understand the basics of investing, to understand how pensions work. And the book also includes a case study which shows the effect of returning to work after having a child, full time versus part time versus taking a 2-year career break. And I demonstrate the snowball effect that can occur and lead to a financial disadvantage for women later in life. And that was really the thing that I want to improve for women of all ages, because it's never too late, actually, to make an improvement in your personal financial situation. But there's a statistic that women in their mid-60s have only 20% of the pension wealth as a man in his mid-60s. And a lot of that stems from the disadvantages deriving from motherhood, or the motherhood penalty, as we say. And I just feel that's really unfair, that when a couple has made a decision to have a family, then it shouldn't result in the woman being financially disadvantaged when it comes to retirement. It's made a whole lot worse, unfortunately, if a divorce occurs during that relationship. So pointers for women would be, please try and be self-sufficient. Make sure you understand your finances and those of your husband or partner in as much detail as possible, because you don't want to be surprised further down the line if you separate or your relationship ends, because that's the worst time to realize that you don't really have a handle on your finances.
Well, Amanda, I feel like you've given us so much advice, and of course we can find more advice in your book, Dare to Be Fair, which is available on Kindle. But in the meantime, Amanda Redman, thank you so much for speaking on RNIB Connect Radio.
You're very welcome.
This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.